Welcome to the Real Talk Real Estate Podcast with host Alam Savani.
Today's guest is someone who's mastered more than one kind of a hustle. Before real estate, Ray Ortiz was a gym owner, learning how to read people, push through pressure, and build systems that get results. Now he brings the same discipline and mindset into real estate, helping clients see value not in just homes, but in themselves. This conversation is about vision, discipline, and what it really means to see value inside and out. Welcome, Ray.
Hey, thanks, man. That was a nice intro. I love that. Yeah, so I appreciate the kind words.
No problem, man. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no worries at all.
So we'll jump into it a little.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe about your journey from a gym ownership to real estate.
Yeah. So I guess I'm a serial entrepreneur of like almost 20 years.
Okay.
Originally started in the fitness industry. I owned 2 bootcamp gyms at one point. Without getting too much detail, COVID was wild for the fitness industry. When my gyms kept getting shut down, it was also a time when real estate was starting to...
It was a big help. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I had a friend who was working at my gyms who was a very successful real estate broker owner of his own brokerage. And he's kind of the one that nudged me in this direction. And I'll be honest, man, I thought it was going to be a really hard transition just based on what my background was in the fitness industry. But ultimately, what I love about business in general, especially service industry, is just working with people. You know, so how I help people doesn't matter so much to me, just so long as I'm helping them. And real estate was able to satisfy that for me, to be honest.
That's good. And any regrets?
No regrets at all. Actually, it's a blessing in disguise because a lot of my fitness clients became real estate clients. You know what I mean? So
you build that network, the relationship.
Yeah. I had one client, my very, very first deal was with an old client in the fitness space. And without saying all of the conversation, pretty much what she said was, we trusted you with our health. We're going to trust you with our house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm guessing a lot of your clients are referral based right now.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. So speaking on how everything is referral based, that means you take care of your clients. You give them the mindset that they trust you. What do you do to gain their trust? What do you do to show them your value and show them that, you know what you're talking about and you're here to help them more than just to buy a house?
Yeah, you know what? I think the reason why I was able to transition so well was when it comes to relationships, you know, I can talk with the best of them, yeah. I think. But what I find is the sweet spot for me is when I just give them my time and attention. Time is probably the most valuable thing that we all have and the most scarce thing that we have as well, right? So when I'm giving my time, I'm giving my attention, sometimes time away from our families, right? Showings at weird times of night, weekends as well. And they appreciate that, you know, because just as long as it's communicated, you know what I mean? I think if we let them know that we also have our own lives and other clients to serve, when they do have our time, they appreciate it a lot more.
No, and that's true. Sometimes they will work around your time as well.
Yeah.
When you mention, I have a family, I have young kids, because you have 2 daughters?
I have a son.
A son and a daughter, yeah.
Yeah. So 11 and 9. And as the kids get older and the family grows, our commitments also grow on the personal side. But we can't let that get in the way of performing for our clients.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the irony to it all is that we can't support our family without our clients.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So it's just about balance. It's just about balance.
How does your family feel about, I'm going to get a little bit personal. How does your family feel on a Saturday, Sunday, or in the evenings when you're not there? Or when you have that stress of a house you got to sell and that's always weighing on you?
They understand. They understand now, especially now that my kids are a little bit older, especially with my wife. Honestly, for any entrepreneur that's married, they know that the spouse is essentially a partner in your business.
Correct.
They might not be in the day-to-day grind with you, but they take care of everything else while you're able to work. So my wife has been like an amazing partner for me. The kids are older now. They communicate. But the thing I love about the communication is that they'll call me out on stuff.
You know, that's amazing. Like they're a little older, but they will.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Will say, Daddy, stop being on your phone all the time, you know, especially if we're out at a restaurant.
Right.
They call me out, you know, so that's kind of their role too. And they're right most of the time because there are moments where I don't have to be on my phone.
But your message is
waiting for sport.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, it's all perspective, right? Like at that moment in time, is the email more important than the family time? There's a time and a place. You know, for everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm learning that now. My kids are young. They're 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife always tells me, like, if it's not urgent.
Correct.
Can you do it? Can you block a time to do it later on?
Yeah.
And it's tough. Like, you know, I have homes on the market and I'm like, okay, you know, someone comes in for a showing. You get a ding on your phone. I don't know. Okay. What time is this? Like, I'm happy. The market's not doing so well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting showings. Mm-hmm. But you know what? There's a time and place for all that.
I'm
slowly learning. Because that stress goes to your kids. It goes to your wife.
Yeah, like
it goes.
Here's the thing. Like when that stress does hit your family, who's going to hit it next? It's going to hit your clients too.
You
know what I mean? So the boundaries are important. Like if you can set boundaries with your family and with their clients and just kind of adjust your schedule accordingly. Of course, you have to leave space for the unexpected, but it's good that you're thinking about it.
So what boundaries? Do you have any boundaries? I'm getting personal.
Okay, yeah. I know it's all good.
Do you have any boundaries like with work or with your wife? Does your wife, have she asked you for some boundaries with work?
Yeah. So, you know, my kids, especially my daughter, they're in a lot of extracurricular activities. My daughter's in competitive swimming and it's complete madness. Like she's training 6 to 8 hours per week. So we only get maybe 2 days off during the week off her practices. They're minimum 2 hour practices each time. Like our Fridays, we're at the pool at 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Before she goes to school.
Yeah.
She's back again at night. But with that being said, like sometimes the practices need my attention. But sometimes they don't, you know, so there are times where I have to communicate with either my daughter or her coaches to figure out which ones I should be more present with. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they're just training and I can like dip out and, you know, work out of a Starbucks and then come back towards the middle of practice. Even my wife, man, my wife will sometimes use the practice time to go do her grocery shopping or whatever other, you know, responsibilities she might have. But yeah, the boundaries are, it's just, I wouldn't say there's a definitive schedule for everything. It's more when you're with family or when you're with clients, be present with them. Give them as much. Because if you're fully present and not distracted by the pings on your phone, you actually become more efficient. You know what I mean?
No, that's true. How did you get to the point where you can be more present when your phone is ringing, but you're not looking at it when you're with your family?
Yeah, so I have this thing where, and it's tough. Like I practice this regularly, but the practice is you kind of have to disconnect with the world to be able to reconnect with your world. And your world would be the friends and the family, right? It's not easy, but, you know, very rarely has my phone gone off with calls, notifications, or emails where it was that urgent that it had to be addressed right then and there. You know what I mean? Like, it feels urgent at the time. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
But more often, it's never that urgent. Even on, you know, for our industry, like offer dates. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, but I get it. You know, sometimes we're offer date situation and, you know, leaving an agent on hold for like 10 minutes or I'll call you back in 30 minutes might feel like an eternity sometimes, but it's never been that.
So that's good. Yeah. I'm learning that right now, how to balance all that.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, okay, if an agent's calling me, it's all for a day. I want to respond within minutes.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm learning sometimes, you know, you don't even need to respond. Let them wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Tactic as well.
It could be a tactic. Right. It could be also just, you know, giving each party freedom to get their thoughts together.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I, honestly, man, like when you give them time to get their thoughts together, I'm sure you'll agree, like communication is so much better. Than
much better. Yeah.
Too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're not all emotional.
Yeah.
Speaking of emotions, what's one emotional mistake you see buyers make that cost them later?
That's a good question. Well, you know, we're in the business of making things look amazing, right? And I feel that you know, especially with our contests, some of our stagers, they do such a good job making the house look stunning. Right. And emotionally, the clients might get attached to it at first glance. But I sometimes have to remind them that, you know, to be wary of the shiny object syndrome. You know, a lot of times I feel like people are looking for turnkey, you know, move in and everything's ready for them. And then when compared to an older house that might not have everything that they want, they forget that they can create that on their own.
That's under pressure. You can, right? You can create something out of nothing.
So I guess like trying to get them, I think having emotion when you look at it's inevitable. Like you're looking at a place to live, where to you might raise your family, you know, where you have your alone time, entertain friends and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's inevitable that people will not be emotional, but like the attachment has to kind of be regulated, if that's a description of it. You know what I mean?
And do you find it hard? Like, for example, we're in a house right now. Someone walks in, they see the staging. They fall in love with it. But when the staging is gone, they come through the final walkthrough. They're like, what happened to the house? Yeah. Like, how do you navigate that?
I guess it depends, right? Like it depends on a lot of things, like what might not be as perfect on the second visit. You know, if it's something foundational, like literally like maybe the foundation or the windows, right? Maybe expensive items like the furnace, the roof, right? Those things we should be addressing as early as possible upon viewing the property. But a lot of it too is like we have to understand our clients too, right? I don't think there's a set strategy when it comes to managing those expectations. We just have to know how our clients are. You know, some are more emotional than others. You know, some are a little bit more, I don't know, thoughtful than others too. So I think we should adjust to the person as much as we can.
Yeah. So when you meet a client for the first time, how do you assess them? How do you understand them? Like, how do you start building that relationship with them?
Yeah.
So you know what they need and then they know what they need from you, right? Because whether you're a buyer or a seller, everybody needs something different from the agent.
Right.
So how do you like understand that and then apply that?
Yeah, I wish I had like a certain criteria that I follow. But one of the biggest things I've been preaching and trying to practice myself for a good year, and the closest people to me know I've been doing this a lot, is I've been trying to practice extreme empathy. People, right? So I'm trying to live in that person's shoes, not just clients, not just family, but just anyone that I interact with. I'm trying to kind of think how they would think, right? By trying to live in their shoes, from there, I can kind of get an idea of what their thoughts might be or what they're looking for. Obviously, there's questions that we have to ask on top of that. And then, you know, with the empathy, there's a part of it where it's just intuition, where I just have to see if I vibe with these people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid to turn clients away. And it might not have anything to do with the product that they might be selling, or the house, or the budget for purchasing. It might not have anything to do with that at all. Is it a person that I just want to enjoy my time with? You know what I mean? Like, we get pretty intimate with our clients.
Yeah, we do.
Spend a lot of time with them.
We know a lot of things about our clients that sometimes we should not know.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know?
Exactly right.
No, and it's, for me, it's like, also our values have to be aligned, and ethics is a big thing.
Yeah.
And you got to be on the same page, right?
Value, ethics, of course, energy, you can sometimes just
do it. Yeah.
You know, so those are my criteria, like empathy and energy, I would say. And I've done it where I just didn't feel it was a good fit. There was nothing on paper that said it shouldn't have been a good fit. It just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
In my gut. So I was willing to walk.
No, and I think your gut tells you a lot, right?
Yeah.
It can tell you if you vibe now, but you kind of, if you feel something off, then it's like, I don't even want to touch it. Like, I've gone through it where I've taken a listing.
Yeah.
And I went for it because we vibed, but I also knew that like when shit hits the fan, we're going to be in two separate directions. Like, we're thinking totally differently.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. It blows up, right?
It blows up. And then, like, it goes back to what we're talking about, family.
Yeah.
Who do we take it on?
You take it on your family, right?
Yeah. And, like, that energy spreads to the household.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So no one really wins when you're kind of compromising all everything. Yeah. And values, right?
No. So it makes sense.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. It's the family part of it is tough.
Yeah. It's tough.
That stress, that emotion. Because sometimes you have to be laser focused on your work.
Yeah.
And it can drag from 8 in the morning all the way down to 9, 10, 11 at night.
Yeah.
And like that's all you're doing.
Yeah. But I don't know if balance is really possible in this industry. You know what I mean?
It's very hard. I'm trying to figure out what the balance is and how to do it. And it's difficult. Like,
I feel like it's a holistic balance.
You know? Yeah. I think it's like in those 24 hours, how do you balance everything?
Yeah. Yeah. How I look at it.
Yeah. Like, I'll drop my kids to school in the morning because my wife works and then I'll pick them up.
Yep.
But between that 4 to 7 period is a time I've tried to put aside for my kids, right? But that's also the time when people are finished work.
Right.
Now, if they're finished work and someone calls me and I'm like, I pick up and they're like, listen, I want to go see your house tomorrow night or tonight. Then you got to go on the system. You got to type everything out, search for homes.
Yeah.
By the time you start doing that, it's 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And like, that's where I feel like from the business side, we have to be more responsible with the systems that we develop. You know what I mean? It's a lonely game sometimes, real estate. And especially if you're an agent that's doing it solo versus being part of a team,
yeah,
you get very lonely. So you have to make sure that you have your systems in place, then you have the people in place and potential backups in place. Like, I had a situation just last night where I had a family commitment and my clients want to go see a house. And thankfully, I was able to call on a really good friend who's an agent that was able to do the showing for me, you know? Yeah. So kind of like what we have, like, we have a good, like, trusting relationship.
Yeah.
It's important to keep building that network of trust, you know?
No, and it's good. And even the agents you surround yourself with is key.
It's huge.
It's huge because you, if you surround yourself with people who half-ass do stuff, that's all you're going to do stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it goes back to what we just said about the clients. It also applies to the people that we work with professionally as well, you know?
Yeah, as well. So you're like, phone call, ignore it.
There you go. I appreciate that. You're learning quick, man. Yeah. You notice I don't have a cell phone on me anywhere.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And I'm on an airplane mode, you know? He still has to, but at least he can not hit the call.
Sorry. So I'm just thinking, he's doing good. He's doing good. I'm very much attached.
Sure. Most people are. Most of us are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most of us are. You know, it's just the lives that we live nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
But there's tools, man. Like, I use tools on my phone. Like, I use this app called Opal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's essentially a screen time management program.
Oh, okay.
Right? So the one thing that I'm really guilty of is when my social media platforms are on, you know, like, everyone doom scrolls.
Scrolls.
You know, and when I evaluated how much time I spent just doom scrolling for no reason, it made me sick to my stomach. So I actually paid for this app and it limits any app that might make unproductive, you know? And it's not only does it block these apps, it makes it hard for me to log back onto the apps. There's X amount of steps that you have to do to get back onto it. Yeah.
So how much, I'll tell you my screen time afterwards, but on average, before you use this app, how much screen time were you on?
Oh, man. At least 5 hours.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm more. Yeah, most people are more. Most people are pushing like 10
pops a week.
Yeah, yeah.
When I get the notification that says, today you've only averaged 7 hours, I'm like, thank God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, now I have my social media down to maybe 90 minutes a day, tops.
Yeah.
So that was hard.
Yeah,
that was really hard to do.
Every time you scroll.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... No.
It's tough, man, but like, there's a freedom that you feel when you're not so, I don't want to say addicted is a word, you know what I mean? But when
it's addicted, because how often do you really need to be on social media? How much business do you get off social media, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It's an addiction that everybody has.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. And I think, again, like, I'm lucky that people call me out on it. Like, my kids and my wife will call me out on it, so that helps.
Yeah,
makes you feel bad at the time, but
then later on you feel like
it helps.
Okay,
I'll need accountability, right?
Yeah. Well, my kids don't call me out on it, they're still young.
Yeah,
they'll give me my phone.
Yeah.
So the phone rings, they're like, daddy, hear you. They come and they bring me the phone. But they do mimic, like, when I'm on the phone doing deals, talking to clients. My phone's sitting there, my younger one will pick up and he'll go like this and walk around.
Right.
Like, they mimic it, but, like, you know.
You're building your team, man. You got your retirement plan strategized already. I'm going to do that.
I'm waiting for you to
do that. Save that for another episode. Number two, we'll save that for. Yeah.
So, Ray, what's the first detail that tells you a home is worth the asking price? So when you walk inside a house, how can you tell that the house is worth the price they're asking?
Every house is different, but for me, like a telltale sign is the kitchen. Like, you know how they say the kitchen is
the heart of the home?
Yeah. Right? Anytime I look at a kitchen and see how well maintained it was, or how clean it is, or what kind of time and effort was made into the renovation or design of the kitchen, I can tell a lot about the rest of the house just from looking at the kitchen. You know what I mean? But yeah, there's nothing specific. Like I think that, like most agents, what I always start with is market data first.
Yeah.
The sold comps. But then we know the industry quite well where, you know, what we see online through photos and videos don't always tell the full story.
Oh, and that's, that's true, because I saw a house by a preview. Went in, the pictures looked amazing.
Yeah.
I went inside, it was garbage.
Yeah, like I'm not going to say where the house is or
anything. Yeah,
but like,
Jay was with me and it was totally different than the pictures were. And the angles and the way they did the virtual staging, like they
had, it was virtually staged.
Virtually staged.
Okay.
So it had a carpet on the floor, and then you move the carpet, there's stuff there. And then there was a vent on the ceiling with a light attached to it.
Okay. What? That's annoying. You know?
Wow. So yeah, there are the things that we can see right away after
that. You have to have an attention to detail. You know, and it's weird. It's things that we're not taught when we're taking a real estate course.
Well, that doesn't teach you anything.
Yeah, they don't teach us anything. So your boy learned from the best, home inspections and home inspectors.
Home inspectors, yeah.
Like they are amazing, and I love just shadowing them. They point out stuff all the time that I never would have been able to find on photos, videos, or even if with my own eye. You know, so they've really educated me on what to look for in terms of finding good bones of the house.
So I'm gonna
not being distracted by all of the lipstick.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna put you on a spot.
Right, go ahead.
What's one thing that you learned from a home inspector that you never have thought to look at before?
The foundations.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just like cracks and how they even form, right? So the more recent one, this home inspector showed me how along the foundation with the windows, how step cracks could happen. Not just from like the foundation settling, just over time. And he showed me like what can be done to kind of remedy it, or little strategies you can do to maintain it so that it doesn't even get to that point. You know what I mean? So yeah, I was never big on looking at the bones of the house. Like I was really blessed, like my first mentor in real estate, Ralph Cienzo, like he was a home builder. So
oh, he was a home builder.
Yeah, he was a home builder for a long time with Mattamy Homes, and he helped me look at a lot of things that I never would have looked at, you know. So and it's ongoing, you know, it never ends.
Yeah.
That education process. But yeah, I would say like the foundation is kind of the thing that I learned the most from a home inspector and what to look
for. Well, yeah, I learned a lot from a home inspector.
Yeah.
One thing is also, you know, what I have is just like a little plug you put into the sockets.
Yeah.
So I got that from a home inspector. So now when I go for showings,
yeah,
I bring that.
Bring your own?
I bring my own.
Nice.
$20 off Amazon.
Yeah.
And I just plug them in. And
see what this power.
You get a little idea.
Yeah.
On, right?
Nice.
I'm going to have to buy one of those.
Then, okay.
And then because my client's like, what is that? I'm like, we'll make sure that these plugs work.
Yeah.
Because if like a plug works in a kitchen, one side, and the other side doesn't work.
Right.
It could be an issue with the wires.
Yeah.
But if another plug in another room doesn't work, you know, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. I'm going to buy one.
Yeah, done. There you go.
All right. That's a good. Yeah, I just learned something.
Can you share me a story where you saw hidden potential in a house and it paid off for your client?
Oh, yeah, actually. My very, very first purchase was a condo in North York, right? And it was like the area at the time wasn't the nicest,
okay,
right? But then, you know, we sometimes had joints of what's being
built. It was coming, yeah.
And I just knew they're dumping a lot of money into this pocket of North York. And she paid a little bit more than what even I would have wanted to. But yeah, fast forward three years now from that purchase, the area is stunning. It's like a go-to hotspot, especially for her demographic, which is like the late 25 to early 30 year old demographic, per young professional,
yeah,
no families yet, and they're just able to enjoy the area. She
looks good.
Yeah. So she paid a little bit more for the actual condo itself, but it paid off in Ilaria.
Area not long.
Sure. It's elevated the value.
Once the market goes back up, then it's
Yeah, exactly.
What's one for sellers? What's one low cost improvement that really moves the needle?
Oh, paint.
100%. I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah, paint all day.
Yeah,
paint can change the entire look of the house. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't think if you gave your house a fresh coat of paint that you'll ever lose money.
Wow. No, on that, you will never lose money because it makes it look fresh.
Yes.
Right? Like you walk in, like these guys painted the house and it just looks a little fresher.
Yeah.
But you would be careful what color you paint the house.
For sure, the color.
Yeah.
And the workmanship too.
You know, yeah,
you don't want it to be cheap.
Yeah.
You don't want to get crappy paint. And I would always say, even though it's expensive, it is worth it to invest in a professional painter because, you know, their attention to detail, their lines, like, you know,
they no,
great job.
Yeah.
And definitely worth the investment. So fresh coat of paint, guys. relatively low cost compared to what else you could have spent on the house. You know what I mean?
And then for buyers, how can you teach them to learn to see value the same way you do?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we're talking about earlier. Like, not look beyond the shiny objects.
Yeah.
Look beyond the staging. Look beyond even the paint.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen houses where the paint job might be not to highlight the house, but to hide something
yeah.
in the house. So there's always signs of that. You know, sometimes a little deficiency on the ceiling. Freshly painted, but you can kind of see like a small ring of potential water damage, something like that. You know, so I always try to educate my clients in looking for little things like that.
So when you walk into a house and with buyers, what are certain things that you are looking out for while they're touring the house?
Water stains is a big one. Yeah, water stains is a big one. Cracks on the walls, cracks in the ceiling. We had one recently, actually, where my client loved this house. We couldn't figure out if there was anything wrong with it, or like it just felt too good to be true. Let's put it that way. Anyways, like we just did a very small thing and just started running the faucets in all of the bathrooms for just 5 minutes. We did one in the upstairs. I come downstairs. I just see water like
pooling
off of the ceiling. You know what I mean? And then we noticed that there was a little bit of discoloration. Even though it was like a fresh coat of paint, there's like a slight, and I was like, oh shit, like there's like part of that paint that's leak, right? So the irony is, I don't even think the seller agent knew about it.
Knew about it. It happens a lot.
Yeah, I think the sellers just kind of hit it
yeah.
and hoped to get away with it. We didn't end up putting an offer on the house just because we just felt that it was leading to more potential, you know.
Yeah, I'd swear.
Right?
Did you let this? You let the seller's agent know?
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. We had to let them know that we actually were the ones that shut off the water supply, because if we didn't,
you went downstairs and you turned
it would have flooded the house within an hour. You know what I mean? So we saved them a few $1,000 worth of damage.
Probably a little more than a few thousand.
Maybe more. Yeah. Things like that, man. Like, that's kind of the first example I had in my head of a situation.
I look right away.
All the time.
Water stains.
Yeah.
And I look at the baseboards.
Okay.
To see the cracks, like, from the baseboard to the floor.
Yeah.
And flooring, too.
Yeah. Flooring's a big one.
Yeah.
Like, when you walk.
When you wobble, it's like, is it just because it's not done proper, or is there a foundational issue?
Because you can follow those sounds.
Yeah.
Then, like, I've had situations where we're walking, we can hear cracks. As you step, it gets a little bit louder. And then all of a sudden, it might lead to a dresser. I slide the dresser out slightly. All of a sudden, there's this huge, like,
oh my.
divot. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I felt like I could have fell through that thing if I just give it a little bit of pressure. But yeah, like, you have to be a little bit investigative when you're walking through the house. You know, follow the cracks, follow the stains, follow the noises in the floor. You know, you'll always find something.
On the seller side, you have a couple homes for sale right now. I have as well.
Yep.
The market's really tricky.
Yep.
What advice would you give sellers right now in the market to get their home sold as fast as possible, or to reassure them that it's not their house that is
yeah.
the issue?
Yeah, two separate questions. Yeah. I guess for the reassurance, the better agents out there will leverage the data.
Yeah.
Right? So the data speaks loudly in those situations where our clients might be feeling a little bit upset that their house hasn't sold in like a week, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. right? It's weird that we're at a point now where 30 to 60 days is like a norm.
That goes back before 2009.
That's true.
Right?
Like, that's before either of us were licensed.
Were you licensed?
Nope, no, I was not. I was not.
Yeah. So it goes back to that. It just now takes time.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Patience is the game right now, I would say.
Well, no, what advice would you give your current sellers right now to help move the house faster in a market like this?
Yeah. So I don't know how much we can do to move it faster in this market, but we can at least assist in getting more visibility to our listings, right? So, you know, the typical would be to put it on the MLS, you know, make sure it gets out to the apps like realtor.ca, House Sigma. But there are so many other ways you can get it out to the market, whether that's boosting a post on Instagram or Facebook, or more targeted ads, even running ads to open houses. I felt that helped me a lot to at least increase traffic to open houses as opposed to just relying on the realtor apps. And then, you know, there's a point where I wouldn't give it a specific number, but you know, let's call it like roughly 30 to 45 days where maybe your listing might feel a little bit stale. So it's not a bad idea to sometimes take new exterior photos just to change things up a little bit.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Maybe change the different videos or have multiple videos kind of ready to go so that you can change up the way that you're presenting it to the public. You know, so I don't know if there's anything, any one thing specific. I'm sure it does depend on what market you're trying to sell your home to. But yeah, those are all things that I've tried to mess around with.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I like the more exterior photos.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing more videos now in my houses, which is not talking about the house itself, but just shooting content.
Content.
So like we're doing the podcast right now.
Yeah.
It's in one of the houses I'm selling.
Yeah, yeah. Very.
Oh, that's beautiful. I wanted to touch on too. So I have this house. It's roughly 1.4 mil. You recently sold a house in Richmond Hill as well. For was a
165.
So just help me out with that journey and see if there's something I'm missing, because we're getting showings.
Yeah.
We're getting more showings than normal.
Okay.
But there's no movement.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, everyone's going to say, okay, it's price, it's small, or I don't like this, or it's too big.
Yeah.
But you had a much larger house.
Yep.
So how did you, I'm pretty sure you had somewhat the same.
We had a decent amount of showings. We were on the market when it started to dip a little bit.
Okay.
Right? My clients were in a situation where they did not want to make rash decisions with regards to the pricing. So, you know, a lot of times when we find that the house is not selling, you know, first instinct is to drop the price.
Yeah.
Right? In this situation, we knew that that was our play, but we waited quite a bit before we made that decision. So we were at 60 days on the market before we decided that it's time to drop the price. But it just so happened we lucked out a little bit where we had a couple of showings a weekend before we were going to drop the price. And I kind of said, listen, let's just wait for these showings, see what happens. Things that I tried to help the showings move along better were that I was present at the showings, you know, to also assist in the
buyer. So you came, sorry, could I ask?
Yeah, I attended the
showing. You attended the
showings? Yeah.
Every showings or
just? Not every showing, just kind of towards the end, just to kind of give it a little push and,
yeah,
you know, a little bit of salesmanship, you know, to kind of offset any objections they might have regarding the house. That helped a lot. In this situation, it helped perfectly because we ended up finding a buyer. We never ended up having to drop the price at all.
Okay, so that was cool. That's very interesting because in the Toronto market, the sellers are never present. So as agents are never present. Yeah. But you go to New York, you go to BC, they're present. Yeah. The buyer's agents don't come. They just come, they book an appointment, and the seller's agent shows them the house.
I let them know that I'm going to show up.
And how did they react?
They're fine with it. Yeah, there's no real resistance. I was transparent. Like, you know, I'm trying to sell this house.
Yeah.
I mean, so I told them straight up, like, maybe there's questions that you might have about the house. Instead of just relaying it to me via text or email or phone call, I'll just answer it on the spot, you know? And it kind of goes back to what we're talking, just having good, honest communication. But it's not something that I do a lot because, you know, me personally, I like to have private time when I'm showing
my
house, you know, so I kind of do ask them for permission to see if they'd be okay with it. Then like after I'm done saying what I need to say, I give them more time to finish the showing privately. And I just kind of,
yeah, you step out. Yeah. And no, which is a good, added service you actually do
for
the sellers because they're seeing you work, right?
They're seeing us work, but it's also us kind of putting our mouth or our money where our mouth is.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, our job is to sell the house. You know, so if that means me having to door knock more houses, if that means me pumping more money towards ads, just do whatever it takes, you know?
Yeah, I'm pumping a lot. Like, you know, the average house, just stage market and everything, anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000.
Easy.
Yeah. Right? That's easy. And it's like, the money just goes like this.
It does. Yeah.
It just flies right out. But what are you thinking right now about the market, the way it is?
It's unpredictable.
Yeah.
For me anyways.
No, I'm the same.
Yeah. Like every time I feel I know what's going on, I don't.
You know? It changes so much that like one day it's like, okay, we're going to get something.
Yeah.
And then they wait one day and everything changes.
Right. Like, you know, we're definitely in a buyer's market still. I would say the one thing that I love about this market is that my interactions with the agents have been amazing. There's definitely more honesty in the negotiations than I ever had for myself in the last recent years.
No, I agree with that too. Both sides are more, they're more open.
Yeah.
They're more transparent.
Yeah.
Rather than like, this is one
crazy games, right?
Yeah. So I tell the agents, like, listen, if you're going to offer on my house, I tell them like, this is what my bottom line is from the get-go.
Right.
Not the actual number, but like roughly in that area, so that no one's wasting time. And on the buyer side, I do the same thing.
Yeah. That's a better way to go. That's a better way to go.
I say, come, give me your best offer, and if I can match it, I'll say yes. If not, let's cut and move on.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we said about what's the most valuable is all of our time.
Yeah.
Right. So there's no need to play games nowadays. I don't think there ever was a need to play games.
There's never was. Offer date scenario.
Yeah,
COVID and everyone was like, right. I'm not going to tell you anything.
Yeah,
I guarantee you 20 years ago, the conversations were so much different.
Yeah,
you had a piece of paper and you have to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Your client, you go, can you sign here? And then you do the deal that way.
That's exactly how it used to be, man.
But you had to ask at that phase. You don't know how I could do it with, because you know what? Some of my clients are like, they're traveling.
Yeah.
So if I get an offer, what, I can't do anything until they come back.
Yeah.
Right. So like e-signature has made things so much.
I agree.
Yeah.
Good old technology, you know?
So what do you hope clients feel after they're working with you? Like what kind of a feeling or impression do you like to leave with them?
Not so much a feeling, but I want them to know that I have skin in the game with them. Like I said, like I'm willing to do it all for my clients. I will move furniture. I'll do garbage runs for them. I'll fix a light fixture. I'll install new light fixtures, doorknobs, like whatever it takes, you know, on top of the traditional marketing strategies like digital marketing, social media ads, print ads, all those you have to do no matter what. But getting your hands dirty, and when the clients see that you're willing to get your hands dirty, I think they appreciate that so much more. Because that's not part of our job description, and not a lot of people are willing to do it. You know what I mean? I've thrown my back out. I don't want to throw my back out, but I have thrown my back out. And the irony in throwing my back out in front of my clients is like, oh man, you're willing to like break your back for us. literally willing to break your back for us. So yeah, like I guess the feeling there is just that I'm with them, man. I'm with them like every step of the way. And like, I have to prove it to them. You know, I don't want to just talk my way into their trust. I want to show them actual actions that they can see me moving things. You know what I mean? I think that's more meaningful to them than just kind of hearing it.
Yeah.
Right.
We're gonna change it up a little bit. I'm going to do some rapid fire questions.
Let's go.
Pre-con or resale?
Resale.
Open house or private showings?
Private showings.
Downtown or suburbs?
Suburbs.
Buyer client or seller clients?
Seller clients.
Staging or virtual tours?
Staging.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Dream vacation spot?
Hawaii.
One thing you can't start your day without?
Coffee.
City condo or suburban house?
Suburban house.
Biggest pet peeve?
Being late.
Favorite GTA neighborhood?
Leslieville.
First job you ever had?
Ooh, Taco Bell. Oh, it's Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. Most used app on your phone?
Most used app on my phone? I would say Instagram.
One word your friends would use to describe you?
Loyal.
One piece of advice for sellers?
Patience.
All right. And the craziest showing story.
So craziest showing that for my buyers.
Yeah, for your buyers.
Oh man. Can I talk about this a little bit more?
About it.
We went into this house and we're walking around and all I could hear is like kind of like this like Darth Vader, right? And we're just like, what is that? And then we get to the family room And there's this guy on a ventilator, this old man on a ventilator.
Holy smokes.
Just pale, just pale, pale, pale. We legitimately thought this guy like was dead. And I called the agent. I was like, hey, man, like, is this guy okay? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just don't worry. Like, you can still do the showing with him being there. I was like, are you serious? Like, this guy does not sound too
good right now. More than you. How did your client
feel? Oh, we were freaked out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were all freaked out. Yeah, once we saw him, we left and I called the agent from the outside. But yeah, we thought we had a dead guy on the couch during a show. He scared the crap out of us.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, come on, man. Give me a heads up on the listing or something. Give me some sort of heads up, you know?
Yeah.
Agents will tell me if there's a cat in the house, you know what I mean? But they won't tell me if there's a guy on a ventilator sitting on the couch.
Yeah, nothing compared to much.
Tell me.
Mine's so much simpler than that. But okay. It's like, we went in to do a showing. We walked in. And there was tenanted.
Okay.
So tenants were home. And we were told it was vacant. So we're expecting to be vacant. You know, they open the door. We walk into the kitchen. And then to the right, there's a bed. And there's someone sleeping, a kid sleeping on it. Then we go into the next room. And there's a den. And there's three beds there. People are sleeping in it. Wow. There was like 15 people in the tub. We didn't even make it any further.
Yeah.
The clients were just like, this is
stepping over people.
Yeah. Stepping over people where they're like, listen, there's like 15 people in here.
Yeah.
We're estimating.
Right.
Like, how is the house maintained?
Yeah.
Right. Like, it was just beds everywhere. And I called the agent and I'm like, dude, there's like 15 people living in here. And he's like, we know that there's some family over, but I'm like, no, man, these are that.
These are
all different.
This job definitely has stories or something.
No, it has so many issues.
Just leave it as diaries. But I've heard some crazy stories. I've done some of my own crazy stories, but yeah, like, I think that's the one part I love about this industry is that you never know what you're gonna get on it.
It's unpredictable.
Yeah.
Your schedule changes minute by minute.
Yeah, it's actually
throwing for interest.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
especially when there's tenants in there.
Yeah. So, oh man, tenant life or lease life. This industry is different, man. You know, and I feel like all agents kind of start there, like with rentals. Yeah. You know, and those are where some of the crazy stories are.
Yeah, I haven't had that many crazy rental stories. Yeah. I've heard a lot, but I haven't.
Yeah, I've had some
like
stuff. One's had some crazy stuff in rentals too.
There's one in Pickering that it was virtually staged. It didn't mention virtually staged, but the front of the house was virtually staged.
Okay.
So the front of the house, it showed a nice white bungalow,
okay.
And it had like a circle driveway, kind of like a U,
right.
And like it had a water fountain in front and everything. It was for lease. It was $3,200. My client said, let's go inside and take a look.
Uh-huh.
We drove by the house four times because the house was not white.
Okay.
It was like just brown. Like the sidings was all,
jeez.
Was like falling off.
Yeah.
It was completely like a forest.
Oh my God.
And then we walked inside and it was a virtual stage.
Yeah.
It was nothing. there was a hole in the seat.
Yeah.
Like I called the agent. I'm like, what's wrong?
Yeah.
I'm like, you're misrepresenting the property by a lot. I'm like, we drove by the property thinking, like, what is this forest house?
Yeah.
I don't know. But what's the lease story?
Oh, man. I had one recently. It was this townhouse in Unionville was easily like a $1.6 million townhouse, but it was for lease. I want to say like $4,000 a month.
Okay.
Get in there, and there's just like a straight frat house, like all these students sitting there. But not only living there, like we went into this walk-in closet and this kid had like a single bed. He's living in the closet, right?
That's up. Yeah.
And I asked him, I was like, is this your room? He's like, yeah, I sleep in here. I was like, really? And then he said, yeah. Like they were probably sharing the house with like six or seven different students. And, you know, just he got the short on the stick, had to sleep in the closet, you know? But the flip side, man, you look at his clothes in the closet. It's like Gucci, Louis Vuitton. I was like, man, like you outside, you look like you own this place. Like you're living in the closet. Like, that's crazy. That was recently too, man. Nuts, man. Nuts. You know, so I'm never shocked anymore with how living conditions are, even in the nicest of houses.
Yeah. You know, honestly, sometimes I wear my shoes when I go inside for showings.
It's a bit, yeah.
You have no choice. Like, I'll
catch something.
Yeah.
Gotta protect yourself, man.
Bugs on the floor. Shoot like dust, like this thick. It's just like, and then you know when you have female clients, they don't wear socks all the time. So I tell them wear socks,
yeah.
Right? Or wear something that you know.
Yeah.
It could get dust on, and you don't know. Like,
yeah.
I walked floors where like they're sticky, and I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah, and you don't even want to know why it's sticky.
You know, you don't
don't even ask what the sticky substance for is. You don't want to get that answer.
You get turned off by the smell of the house?
Sometimes, but like it can be fixed though. You know what I mean? Like I get it. Like sometimes first impressions, if it's a smell that's foreign to our clients,
yeah,
it might bother them. But, you know, I've had seller clients where there was a smell in the house and we were able to remedy that pretty fast. So I don't use that as a determining factor unless it was like fully embedded into the drywall. Or,
yeah.
More often it's just a cultural thing and it's just like food. You know what I mean? So we can get rid of that smell.
So if a client came into a house and it smelled like smoke, and would you, and they wanted to kind of be like, I don't want this house, but it was perfect for them, but it has a smell of smoke. How would you navigate that?
Yeah, it gets hit or miss. I think if the house had more carpets, for example, that's when it gets a little bit harder
to get
that smell out, right? I wouldn't say there's anything specific in terms of navigating to it. Like it just ends up being a judgment call at the end of the day. But we've sold houses where people smoke inside of the house and we're able to get that smell out after a few days, you know, using a machine. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Do you get like a smoke machine?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a smoke. It's like a, I don't know what it does, man. It just kind of like gets the ions and kind of changes it. You just have to leave this box in a box for 24 hours and then it gets rid of the smells. Okay. They just move it to the next room and rinse and repeat, you know? So they have stuff for that.
They do. I've had people walk in and like, I don't want it. They don't even touch it. They don't do anything. But like, those are some of those houses you get deals on.
Yep. Right? I agree.
What's a piece of advice that shaped your approach in real estate?
Ooh, I would say to appreciate the chaos. This job comes with so much chaotic situations. You know what I mean? If you just kind of accept the chaos and know that something good happens at the end of it, it makes the process a little bit easier to kind of deal with. But I feel like in our industry, chaos is inevitable.
No, it's inevitable. It happens all the time.
Yeah. So we just have to welcome it with open arms.
I get frustrated with it sometimes.
Sure. Of course.
Like I'm having a good day and then boom, something you don't expect.
Yeah. But that's the point. Like it's meant for us to overcome and it's meant for us to build resilience. And I really believe that you don't get success in any capacity without a little bit of chaos. You
have to
put yourself in the fire a little bit, you know?
Do you think failure is a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah. Failure is a good thing. It's also a fake thing. Like, I don't think you ever really fail, you know? Like, it's all learning lessons for you not to make a mistake again, right? So failure is just part of the game, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's perfect, you know? So just as long as you acknowledge the failure, and if you can sit down and evaluate where you might have failed, quote unquote, and you adjust accordingly, I think, you know, you're going to come out of it okay, regardless of the situation.
Regardless of the situation, yeah. What was the first house you ever sold?
The first house I ever sold was that wartime house in Scarborough. It was a bungalow, a little bit older, not many renovations. But at the time it was in a very popular part of Scarborough where there was a lot of rental potential and need for rent.
Yeah.
So that was the first house I ever sold and it was a scary one because I had the deal done firm. The agent did not drop the deposit the next day and I had to figure out how to resell it in 2 days. It just so happened that was my first deal and my broker of record was gone during those 2 days. So I had to be very creative with how I resold it. And we did. We were able to. There's a lot riding on that one because it was a friend of mine. It was her parents' house. So I just felt
it makes it hard.
Really obligated to make sure that it went through. And the original price that we sold for was amazing. And I didn't want to lose too much money off of that price. But yeah, that was a good chaos learning experience. All of it, man. You know?
Has that ever happened to you again where the deposit has not been put in through?
No, it just so happened that I was just working with a very unethical
agent
at the time. And thankfully, like the majority of the agents I work with have been a pleasure to work with. But, you know, you always get that one bad.
Get that one, yeah. That's happened to me in the last 2 years, twice.
Yeah.
And they just don't. The deposit, they change their mind and they use that as an escape. We're close to running out of time.
Okay.
What's one takeaway you want to give to the listeners today?
One takeaway to give to the listeners, I would just say with everyday life and how you interact with others, try not to let your ego kind of stop you from building good relationships. I feel like sometimes with certain first impressions upon meeting new people based on one's personal ethics and values at the time, they might say no to that person. You know, whether it's something as small as a short conversation, mm-hmm. all the way up to working in some sort of meaningful relationship. I think our egos kind of get in the way of a lot of things. And kind of like what I mentioned earlier, if we practice a lot more empathy in others, you'll see that there's more things alike between people than there are differences, you know? So yeah, that's what I would preach. Empathy, man.
And what got you thinking about practicing more empathy? Because I know you mentioned it at the start mm-hmm. and again now. So what got you to that point where you realize you need to practice more empathy?
There's a lot. But if I were to give a short version of it, it's hard to do things alone. In anything that we do, I feel that no one really does anything alone. Everyone has help. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the ones that do it alone, it sucks, like to go on a lonely journey. And if you empathize with other people, they'll reciprocate it back to you.
Yeah.
And not only that, they'll be more willing to help you out if you needed it. You know what I mean? So yeah, I was like old school, man. You know, like I would always just try and do everything myself and not talk to people. And
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Rogue.
Yeah, rogue, man.
That's like what it is.
Yeah, it can work up to a certain point, but at some point, man, like you have to get help from somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the ones that are, you have to be willing to help them for them to be willing to help you, you know? So yeah, I would say that's really the biggest thing.
You're going in, it seems like you've done like a self-discovery, self-care, like you're in that kind of mental mindset.
For decades now.
For decades, yeah. Because it takes a long time to understand yourself,
yeah.
Right? And it takes a long time to truly figure out who you are as a person.
It does. And right? I think where a lot of people get messed up is when you change as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not the same person I was even 5 years ago, yeah. You know? And I think by acknowledging that change is normal, there's changes obviously that can lead in a bad direction and you want to avoid those, but change is inevitable, you know? And I think once people kind of accept the change, the mind changes with it and it allows for learning new things, educating yourself with different things. And yeah, like a self-reflection should be every day though, you know?
Did you do so? I don't do self-reflection every day.
A lot.
You do?
Yeah. I journal a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I used to meditate a lot actually, but I don't as often. And when I do, they're quick, kind of 5 to 10 minute meditations at the most. But it's just little things to kind of just be aware of, not only your mind, your body, your thoughts, right? Kind of going back to what we're talking about with our cell phones, I try to disconnect. Like I used to wear an Apple Watch. I got rid of that.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to rely too much on technology.
I refuse to get an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
For that reason, I'll be 10 times worse.
Oh, it's crazy.
With an Apple.
It's just nonstop.
Yeah.
It got to the point where I kind of deactivated all the smart features of it and it just became a regular watch. So I was like, what point is this? You know what I mean? But yeah, like I try to be in tune with my mind and my body as often as I can.
No, and that's amazing because, you know, a lot of people now are learning about themselves.
Yeah.
And that plays a big role in real estate too, because you deal with people all day, every day.
Yeah.
And you have to have that right mindset, the right mentality.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it makes it harder.
Yeah. And our industry is very easy to, it's a very copycat industry.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very easy to get caught up in one person's or another agent's success and feel that we have to mimic that in order to achieve the same success. That's not necessarily the case.
No, it's not. So like what I view as success is not the same thing you would review. It's not the same thing, you know, another agent would review. Someone's success to them might be $10 million home, 5 cars, this.
Yeah.
For me, my success is time.
Same. Yeah.
And I've always prioritized time over money.
Yeah.
I will
get more money.
You can always get more money, but how much money do you really need? As long as I have a roof over my head,
mm-hmm.
food on the table, and I can go on a vacation,
yeah.
I'm okay. I don't need
I agree.
That much more, right?
I'm with you 100%. You know, like, I think any entrepreneur has aspirations, all of that, all the money, the car, the house, the clothes, right? But those things are never-ending kind of supply of things. You know, like, they're always going to be a newer shiny object, you know, a newer car, right? But time, especially if you're a parent,
yeah,
you know, and the kids grow so fast, you know, like, you don't get those moments back.
You don't.
And even if you're making 10 million, 100 million a year, you can't buy those moments back either.
No, because you're missing moments,
yeah,
by making that money. And, like, I want to go on a vacation right now. Mm-hmm. It's because my kids are young. They're 2 and 3.
Yep.
And we go once a year. Mm-hmm. This year we're thinking maybe not to go, but I'm like, I want to go because they've been asking to go to the beach.
Yeah.
But I won't get those moments back. So, like, next year, they're 4 and 3. Yeah. And it's different than 2 and 3.
Yeah. That's exactly right, man. Like, we can never buy those moments back. And we're limited with that window with our kids. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I'm with you, man. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. I'm glad you understand how to juggle the family and time.
Yeah, you know.
That's the hardest thing to do.
We drop the ball sometimes. You know, I'm not going to lie.
Everybody's going to drop the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, but I again, like, it's okay to drop the ball just as long as you're aware of everything.
Yeah.
The awareness is important.
No, I think that's good. I think this is a good way to end the podcast. I
appreciate that, man. Yeah. This was fun.
Thank you for joining.
Oh, man.
We'll get you back on again.
Yeah.
And just so the viewers and everyone can get a hold of you, what's the best way? Is there a social handle?
Yeah, you know what? I probably play the most on Instagram, so it's very easy to find me, just Ray Ortiz on Instagram, and shoot me a DM, and, you know, I'd love to interact with you on there.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, brother.
Take care.